kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm here.
You are here.
I'm like everybody else. I'm locked the fuck down and going stir crazy, but it's fine. Yeah.
I almost missed the show tonight. I was sleeping.
Did you have a good nap?
It wasn't a nap. It was just sleep. I went to bed at like 2.
And like 2 p.m.?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, because I go to bed at like 4 a.m. all the fucking time, and I ain't sleeping until
2 p.m. showtime. Yeah, okay. I stayed up that late. I figure I'm just on Ashley's schedule right now.
Yeah. I'm a little more surprised you guys, your schedules aren't meshed more in the first place.
Now, I don't have a schedule to begin with, because I haven't worked in like a decade. So
you just exist when she tells you to exist.
Pretty much. Pretty much. But it is an odd-numbered episode, which means it is a party cast, which means Purnell and Chris are both here. How are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Purnell, did you get out of the dryer? Are you good now?
Purnell. Oh, God, what happened?
Somebody started the dryer. We're just going to hear... Thum, 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 thum.
No, nothing happened. That's all me. But it also explains a lot, because I'm sitting here like talking. I'm like, why does no one hear me?
What did you do?
I just said, I turned off the speaker, but I muted it by mistake, too. Cecil.
Proud of you.
Oh, hush your fuss. Go back. Just get back to the topic that I realized that no one heard me say. You went to bed at 2:30 today? Uh-huh. The afternoon?
Yeah.
Holy pickles. I'm sitting there like, you should have heard me over here. I'm like, what the? Don't stop changing the subject. You went to bed late. So I mean, you didn't hear anything I said about freaking like Nightmare on Elm Street either, did you?
No, I heard all that.
Yeah, we heard that, yeah.
We just ignored really you.
You are gobbledy gobble. I turned the speaker off right before we went on, but that was when I was on. Never mind. Everything's confusing. I'm good. Also, I'm great. How are you guys doing? I get that.
Oh, man. Oh, man. All right. So how's everyone doing? It's another week of craziness. We're still in this post-apocalyptic police state of life.
It's not post yet.
Yeah, we're still in the apocalypse.
It's still underway.
We're working on it.
Does post still make cereal?
Yeah. Why wouldn't they?
I don't remember. I can't remember the last time I saw a box that said post. But I guess that would be Post Raisin Bran, so maybe.
I don't know.
Well, maybe they might have got bought by General Mills.
Yeah, maybe General Mills walked in and broke their ankles and took their business. I don't know.
Who knows? But
drop it, bitch!
Mr. Sinister just dropped 25 bitties, so thank you for those. Cole, I know before we went live, you were having fun dropping bitties in chat as well. You and Lightspeed.
200s.
You and Lightspeed.
I had a.
Thank everybody for the bitties.
Bitty, bitty, bitties, join the bowl.
I love the bitties. We're at 61.11%. It's only been, what, 2 years that we've been affiliate?
We're killing it. I mean, I got a new computer in the time that it's taken you just to refit yours, so we're doing fine.
I know.
Wait, so you don't even get access to this whole bitty thing until you become an affiliate, is what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be an affiliate, and that's when you get bits and subscriptions.
And then you get the sugar, and then you get the powder,
and then you I wouldn't go that far.
No. Yeah, I have no power.
But you got the limo.
I owe a wet pancakes. Let George, where's
wet pancakes?
There we go, wet pancakes.
I'm sure, so as many times as that's been played, I'm still like, ew.
Have you even heard the sound effect?
He made it live, remember?
But, like, have you heard the one that we use pre-recorded?
I have not heard the one heard pre-recorded, but let's be honest, the George lifestyle is harsh enough. He did it in the, I heard him do it, and I cried, and he goes, well, now I got to do it again. And I'm like, no, no, George, no.
So does that mean you haven't ever even seen the Wet Pancakes emote or anything?
Nothing. I ain't seen nothing.
Pernell, you need to get on our Twitch channel.
I put all my love, sweat, and tears into making a wet pancake emote, and Pernell's just like, I can't even be asked to look at that.
Well, it's not that I'm a snob. It's just that I don't care, Cole. Come on.
I don't care about your blood, sweat, and tears. Why not?
Fuck your effort.
I mean, I get what is hypothetical, but I want to actually see a bunch of blood, sweat, and tears in a cup. Like, check it out. See all this shit?
That's how poured it on that. Got wet.
Ew. I don't think George would approve. When he came up with when he did wet pancakes,
like he would.
He was thinking water and sploosh. He wasn't thinking nothing about blood and sweat. And sure as hell no tears.
What is water? Know. Tears are water?
That's mostly salt. If it's all you're salty.
Fucking hard enough, there can be blood, so that's where the splooge comes in.
First of all, if someone's crying blood, maybe they are Candyman. I don't even friggin' know anymore. That's a problem. That needs to be seriously addressed. We're
cross-referencing with the Patreon content. Stuff, so get with your dollar so you can hear us talk about horror stuff.
Forget and about Nickelodeon.
And Gilson really Pontus. Yeah.
Ooh.
This is the best, most unfortunate dollar you will ever spend in your life.
Seriously picture this guy like dressed in like a Dracula outfit. Like,
oh, you know, he too. Wears shit with like puffy sleeves and
hello.
Velvet coat with play a top my hat game. And a monocle.
Please, dare. I need some money. My kids need water.
I want you to play my game.
Nobody has given Gilson B. Pontus kids. I hope.
Gilson Jr.
Oh no.
Gilson J. Pontus.
I love how one day he's just gonna like Google his own name and he's gonna come up like, these guys talk about me every week. They must really love me. He was like, Oh no.
I can only wonder like if he knows he has to know his reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has to. Like it's all over the place. People are a lot meaner about him than I am. At least I'm amused.
Yeah.
Straight content.
Like, we're not just shit-talking his stuff. I mean, we kind of are shit-talking his stuff, but, I mean, there's love behind our shit-talking.
A lot sure. of shit. Nah.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
That shit love.
But behind that love, there's a core of hatred.
Within that core of hatred, there's a Pontus.
Gilson, if you do interviews, hit us up. Come on and chat with us sometime. I want to know why you do what you do.
Some of you might consider it to be a travesty, but I consider it to be art.
If he comes on with like a Poland accent or something like that, I'm going to be like, no, he is the Tommy Wiseau of gaming.
I try to warn you. I am Pontus of the Nators you ever see.
Oh, my lord. Gilson B. Pontus.
I am a pontificator.
If he comes on, we could ask him when his games are coming to Xbox.
There you go.
I have a sneaking suspicion that even Xbox would put their foot down and be like, you can't use this.
Can't do this on Xbox? But I want to.
We have some pretty questionable stuff on Xbox, but
Frizzy,
there's a point where even they go, no, I don't think so, bro.
Bill Gates is gonna look like, you know, somebody just asked him to pay $20 billion in taxes.
I don't know about that. Who just did that voice? Because that was great.
That was me.
Yesai Ninja. Oh man, Pocosuka Wars.
Ooh, no. Bokusuka Wars.
What the hell is a Bokusuka?
Wow, you lost.
I missed out on Bokusuka Wars.
Oh, everybody did. I don't think it came to the U.S.
I did. Carnage
played
it.
It's on Xbox One. I think it's Bokusuka Wars 2, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Murder Miners.
But it is on Xbox One.
But it is an easy completion.
Wow.
If you hate yourself.
The worst.
I mean, I hate myself, but not enough to get achievements.
I was going to say, I know of the original. I don't know of the sequel.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we got games to talk about. We should probably get into this. We got a handful of games to discuss this week. Not as bad as previous weeks.
I'll take it. We can rest for a minute.
We can.
The games are bad.
They might be.
They could be.
They could
be. You just outright state your reviews before they were hatched.
No, I just realized I have like 2/3 of the reviews today, so.
You do.
So yeah, I guess that is up to me to determine.
This is going to be the Chris show.
I was like, wow, like I'll take that breather this week. Go bonkers, Chris. I've been into La Mulana, so I'm like, you know, I could use that time to play this game. So go cuckoo bananas.
Rootbeer says Disco Elysium is coming to the Switch. That's good news.
Really?
Disco Elysium.
Everyone says that's a great game. I've wanted to check it out because it was a game I originally planned to ignore, and then everyone talked it up. And the title, to my understanding, also has little to do with what you expect to get when you play the game.
Well, what would you expect?
Well, something related to an Elysium and a disco. Neither of those things are in the game.
I never know what Elysium is supposed to mean. Like, what's the root of that? What is it, like, generally? Because I know things named after it, but I don't know what it is.
You know the saddest part? One of my favorite games, as he just wrote it on a list that you probably saw on Facebook, is Elysium, and I still don't know what it means.
Okay.
Elysium comes from classic mythology, meaning the abode of the blessed after death.
Okay, cool. That makes sense.
And it does make sense for the game, too, that I have, because you send people to Valhalla, so... There you go. The abode.
It is also an area in the northern hemisphere of Mars, appearing as a light region when viewed telescopically from the Earth.
Oh.
Yeah. See, you learn shit on this show.
Now, what's a disco?
I'm not old enough to know.
Yeah, me neither.
Thankfully.
We might as well address all the news that people are talking about in chat. Carnage brought up during Inside Xbox today that Devolver brought Hotline Miami Collection to Xbox One finally. So that's some good news. We'll discuss more about the Inside Xbox on our next episode when we usually handle the news.
Then, how long Miami wasn't there before?
Not on Xbox, no.
Devolver and Xbox are,
They weren't very close, but they're starting to get closer.
They're just flirting. Yeah.
They're flirting.
Yeah, it was on Windows 10, but it wasn't Xbox Live enabled, as Carnage said, but now it's on Xbox, it's got achievements, and...
Yeah, now we need Ape Out on the Xbox. Hopefully that one's next.
I thought it was.
Ape Out? That's only on Windows 10.
Oh.
Darius the Snow is pointing out Sea of Stars, which is like a game kind of set in the Messenger universe, but it's an actual JRPG.
Mm-hmm.
I have trouble backing a Kickstarter, and that's been killing. Somebody posted that about that to me. I'm like, I should do it. I'm like, I can't do it. Yeah, like I don't feel confident in doing that right now. Like,
yeah, it's a bad time for me to be, you know, doing that. But I do like the Messenger, and I do like when they're really sincere attempts at making a JRPG. And they got Yasunori Mitsuda on board. He's the Chrono Trigger composer.
That's really cool.
And even better, Chrono Cross.
Indeed. And then they're talking about the PS5 controller in chat. That was unveiled today. That looks interesting.
My favorite take is that it looks like Strong Mad.
Yeah, I've seen like a Photoshop. PS5 controller!
I love that the PS5 controller is trending with Xbox controller, and Xbox controller is trending higher.
Is it?
Yeah. And the funny part was Xbox tweeted out a GIF of their controller for the Series X, and everybody was like, "Yeah, it looks better." But basically, everybody's saying the PS5 controller is kind of ripped off from the Lunar White Xbox controller. Except it's still got the symmetrical thumbsticks, which is just sucks. Fucking dumb, guys. Stop it.
At yeah, this those point, symmetrical thumbsticks is that's what keeps me from liking PlayStation, those fucking thumbsticks.
But you don't like the thumbsticks?
Oh, I hate the symmetrical thumbsticks. I hate them.
I never, for me, I can't say whether I like them or dislike them, but I never really had an issue with them per se. But I think maybe it's just, I'm just not noticing the same thing. Cause
it's just uncomfortable that your thumb has to stretch out further to hit the analog stick instead of in the natural position where the D-pad is. That's where the analog stick should be. But Sony's like, no.
Oh, I get what you're saying there. Actually, that does make sense. And I say that because I'm holding an Xbox controller right the heck now. I'm like, oh, now I see what he's talking about.
Yeah, you know where how the thumbsticks are offset on the Xbox controller and they're not on the PlayStation?
Yeah, because like in the end, I think one thing, the reason why maybe it hasn't hit me as much, but I understand because I'm experiencing it now, is that it's just the size of my friggin' hand. Like, for me, like, I'm holding it with a thumb. The ones
for the Series X are actually tapered in and made slightly smaller.
Made smaller?
Yeah.
You know, that's unexpected.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know, I just get this thing where, like, I'm always kind of, like, my hands are just pretty much positioned in a way where, like, they're always a bit big, so they kind of cover the entire controller anyway, so.
Well, you're also a giant.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm Giganto of the Giganticles.
You know, like 7.5 feet tall.
I did have to laugh because there was a guy one time who told me that controllers are designed for male hands and they're too big for women. And so women could never be good at games because controllers weren't made for us.
Strong enough for a man,
stupid. But it's just
and for then, the Series X come out, and they're like, oh yeah, we tapered in the controller so it's slightly smaller, and I was like, fucker. Excuse me, but now it's perfectly made for me.
Also, the Switch came out, and like that controller is too small for anybody.
I if can't you're hold doing the holding shit. The
sideways. Yeah, if you're trying to hold that thing sideways.
I love my Switch so much. It just needs more freaking memory.
I know, me too. I need so much more memory.
Like, even right now, like I said, I have a 400 gig card, and that card is donezo. And
I'm yeah, like, same.
It just sucks. Like, give me more. And I looked up at the 1 terabyte card, but they're still like $300. I'm like, do I want to hold on to my files so much to spend that much on a card? And we just had the chat about not kickstarting Sea of Stars. Like, well, you already know the answer to that.
Pork is now deciding he wants to hang out on my desk, which is great when I have a show to do and I have a cat standing chicken? In front of my computer where I have to read things.
Pork kitty!
I think I prefer when chickens on my desk, though. I'm a big chicken guy.
No, Pork. Mm-hmm. Stay away from my Dr. Pepper and cream soda.
Castiel was over here a minute ago and I just kind of glared at him and now he's wandered off.
Oh, my Lord.
My cat's outside of the room and sometimes he's asking to come into the room, but I'm like, we'll see.
And then you don't let him in. You monster.
I mean, I will when, you know, someone else is doing a review.
Speaking of reviews, yeah, we got to get to those. It's been another 9 minutes since we first said we were going to do reviews. We are so bad at our jobs.
Indeed.
Hey.
Do you have a mouse in your pocket? Because I'm doing great here.
I'm really bad at my job.
All right, we got to get to these reviews. Let's get started. First game to talk about tonight is called In Other Waters, developed by Jump Over the Age, published by Fellow Traveler, released April 3rd on the Switch and PC for $14.99. Play as artificial intelligence guiding a stranded xenobiologist through a beautiful and mysterious alien ocean. A nonviolent sci-fi story, enter a world of wonder, fear, and vulnerability, unraveling the history and ecology of an impossible planet. What will you discover together? Chris, what is this game?
What is it indeed? Okay, so there are disparate elements here at play. So I'm going to kind of do my thing of like trying to describe it using other games that I'm assuming everyone's played. So this is kind of a novel, like I wouldn't say even visual novel, but it's got a lot of text and like the entire. It's more telling you what's happening than showing you. So, you know, I kind of feel like that the visual novel aspect's a little bit there. And it's also a kind of point and click, a little bit point and clicky puzzle, a little bit, you know, using an interface and things like that. And then at the main kind of, interaction in the game is like, so you remember, Metroid Prime, where a lot of the game had you scanning.
Why do the cats
like,
have to fucking dig at cardboard while I'm doing a show?
I just recognized that sound so immediately that I instantly tuned it out.
I know the mic had to pick that up.
I turned around to see if it was Cass because I know he just dove into a box.
Yeah.
Freaking cats.
We all know the sound of cats discovering cardboard again for the first time.
Oh, man. Anyway, you were saying?
Okay, so you remember Metroid Prime and it had that thing where, you know, you were meant to scan, like, little points on, you know, in the world where you are and get data on them, and that actually, like, affected certain things in the game, you know? Mm-hmm. So, like, it'd light up and you'd scan it, and then it'd tell you either information about it or it'd be, like, something to help you solve a puzzle or whatever. Well, that's the entire game here. So you play as an AI. It's like an AI, except that you're using your actual intelligence along with, you know, what's supposed to be artificial intelligence. But that's a question the game kind of explores. You take over the suit functions of a, you know, xenobiologist, so a person exploring an alien ocean, as it says. And she's not only exploring, like, you know, like stuff has gone wrong, both in the exploration, her partner has gone missing, who, you know, you kind of have to unravel that mystery, as well as discovering all this new stuff, because it's all new, like, alien life forms that you're looking at. So you have to, like, you're kind of making first contact, so you have to use the kind of scientific approach of both analyzing it and drawing samples, collecting the samples, and then when you get to an extraction point, you get back to your home base and kind of, you know, figure out what, you know, what you've learned from these creatures and stuff. And oftentimes what that ends up doing is creating upgrades, to your kind of suit or ship or something like that. It's a dot on the screen, so I can't really tell you what it is, but your mode of transportation, gets upgraded, and that gives you access to new areas. Sometimes when you get a sample, you can actually drag that sample back onto the map, essentially, and, you know, maybe, like, clear the way somehow or solve some kind of puzzle. And, you know, all of this is to, ultimately write out this complete story. And, it's not really you're the protagonist and you're the suit, but the main character of interest is the person in the suit, the scientist, who, is kind of like, does a back and forth with you, cause she's trying to figure out who you are, as much as you're trying to figure out everything else, you know? So a lot of times she'll, like, start presenting, options, like, or questions or things like that, and all you can do is say yes or no. And that's going to affect both your relationship with this person and also, like, your relationship with the alien world. So the actual gameplay looks like just a line drawn map, just like if you were doing plain old cartography. It also looks a little radar-ish. And in fact, it does have radar on it. Everything on the screen, barely any of it besides power and oxygen, and the word pilot, which, you know, thanks. You know, you have a power level and you have an oxygen level. Both of these things can be affected, of course, by stuff in the game. And, of course, you want to keep those up as much as possible. Although I've yet to kill off the character, so I don't think that that's going to happen. They say it's nonviolent, so I think it's just stuff that is affected by certain elements in the story. But anyways, besides that, everything is just, like a light up indicator of some kind. And they go from being pretty simple. Like, there's, you know, and by the way, you can, if it's a function that you can do, you can toggle on or off the button that's assigned to it. So a triangle, for instance, is your scanning mode, I think. yeah, it's your scanning mode, and you push it with B, but, you know, apart from that, it's a triangle. And then to go into moving mode, you have to push the X button, and then this thing appears on the screen that you have to aim at another dot. Like, you are a dot. That is your character. You aim at other dots and travel to those dots. It does it one at a time, kind of like a, you know, just like a board game or something like that. If your way is restricted, then you can't do anything, and then you kind of have to figure out whether you need to scan something. You switch into scan mode and use the right stick to, like, just hover over different white things until they turn yellow, and then it, like, explains them to you. And at certain points, the game lets you know that you can take a sample. And when you do that, it switches part of the screen over to this thing where you turn the, like, left stick and then try to find another dot and then, you know, push the up and down button to close the things around it and push the A button. It, like, very much feels like you're operating machinery. It never feels like a game at any point. Like, there's no free movement whatsoever, as far as I know. Everything is done through menus or this interface, which, again, it ranges from being fairly straightforward to very confusing. I missed out on a lot of samples because it took me, like, several screens to even figure out how to collect them. I thought you were just supposed to scan them, but no, you're supposed to close the screen around them and then push the A button, and then that puts them into your inventory. And, you know, from the game offers precious little in the way of explanations for any of this, so you're just kind of left to figure it out for yourself. You know, artificial intelligence, indeed. But the cool thing is that, you know, once you get the hang of it and once you understand the controls, then you do start to, you know, operate more automatically. And then it just becomes a thing of, like, just reading this interesting story that unfolds and, like, learning about these creatures that you just kind of have to visualize because there's no graphics to represent them. The game explains what they look like and you just kind of have to picture it because on the screen, they're just, you know, different colors of dots. And I say different, I mean between blue and yellow. And, you know, like, you're just basically supposed to learn. And the more you learn, the more you pick up and the more you kind of proceed, the more you learn about the character and you get to kind of experience the story that way. So that is what it is. Well, there's, go ahead. Sorry.
I thought you were wrapping up.
Oh yeah. 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 I was just going to say, as well as the graphics being minimal, the soundtrack is also minimal. Largely, it's just ambient sound or nothing.
Well, then for $15 on this one, what are you thinking about it?
Well, $15, I mean, it's a hard sell to anybody who isn't into, I want to say, something that's very text-heavy, like a, you know, sci-fi visual novel type of thing. And like I said, the actual interface is really interesting. I think that this is a try it for just about everybody because I honestly haven't seen any of the three genres I mentioned doing anything like this. So it's a very interesting approach to, like, the sci-fi novel and, like, kind of a point and click collection sort of deal. I found it very fascinating. I definitely tend on, you know, finishing it out and seeing where it goes. But yeah, I'm going to say at $15, it's basically a try it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Convoy, a tactical roguelike developed by Convoy Games, published by Triangle Studios, released April 8th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Convoy is a tactical roguelike inspired by Mad Max and FTL in which you cross a wasteland in search of parts for your broken ship. Presented in pixel art and set in a future post-apocalyptic setting, Convoy is a squad-based tactical combat roguelike in its core. Pernell, tell us about Convoy.
You're on a great big convoy, man, what a beautiful sight. Driving in a great big convoy! That's this game. I'm going to review it. So, Convoy Convoy is an interesting style of game that, honestly, I don't think I've ever really played before in this regard. It's got similarities to other tactical roguelikes, but the coat of paint that they use to cover it makes it a little bit different in an interesting way. And I guess I'll explain it shortly. So,
the Carnage idea wants to know if the game comes with your song first.
Well, we can make a deal. It could happen. We can make this happen.
Convoy Games, hit us up. Pernell will be willing to sing your theme song for you.
Make it happen. Honestly, I think this game would be a much better game if you could actually open up to that cool jingle. I'm just saying. So, like, this game is designed in a way where you, every time you play, the game randomly generates a landscape where your crew has crash landed. And the goal is to traverse this landscape to acquire 4 parts that you then return to the ship where you start out the game at. And that's how you win. You'll probably never win because it's really difficult, but it's fun to try. Now, on this plan that you're on, as you're trying to scavenge, before I even talk about that, I should say, as you're moving around the map, you have to be concerned about a few things. You have vaults, which is the currency for this world. Fuel, which is what ticks down as you drive. You run out of fuel, it's pretty much game over. And then aside from that, there is just the vehicles themselves. You have the actual convoy, which is a large size vehicle that is just kind of there. It has a heavy shield and a lot of health, but you cannot control it as far as like maneuverability on the map, which I'll explain shortly. And then there's the convoy flank, which are the vehicles tasked with protecting the convoy as you traverse the waste. Now, on the actual map itself, it's kind of hex designed, even though you don't move hex to hex, you can kind of freely drive through everything, but the grid is built above the hex. And you move around this map, and as you move, you lose fuel, because that's what happens. And it's a topographical map, so if you pass over areas of land that are more mountainous, for example, you will move slower and you'll burn more fuel. So it pays to kind of want to maneuver around landscapes if you need to save fuel and not get into issues. Now, on this planet, there are also 3 factions that are warring with each other. There's the Raiders, a group called Torvac, and the Privateers. And they each have different aspects to them that determine, you know, like what you'll be dealing with if you fight someone from that faction. Like, one might be more built to have shields on their vehicles. One might just be glass cannons, very powerful guns, but they blow up quickly, stuff like that. And while there are free zones on the map, there are also areas that are clearly run by specific factions. So you know that when you end up in that zone, you're going to be battling one of them or dealing with issues related to them. Now, as you move around the landscape, there are 2 types of events that could occur. There are random events where as you're driving, the game will just stop and you'll get a situation that pops up. Let's say, for example, you know, you find a smoldering wreck and there are bodies hanging out of the wreck. What do you do? And you have to make a choice. And that choice may lead you to despair or, I don't know, hot loot. I don't know. But basically, it can go either way. Sometimes it leads you to despair, which is then followed by hot loot, which is also cool. But it's an interesting way that they make you pretty much kind of toss around random situations in a way where you can't just necessarily say, I'm going to drive from here to there and everything will be fine, because that may not be the case. And I think it's more likely to happen if you're in zones that are controlled by enemy gangs. I haven't confirmed that for sure, but it sure as heck felt that way. There are other events on the map that are actually determined by icons, where they are pretty much considered as points of interest where you can drive up to them and it'll be similar to where you get a scenario that could break down and you have to make decisions that determine how the outcome plays. And some of these outcomes, unfortunately, will lead you to, well, not unfortunately, it's fortunate, that's the game, will lead you to battle skirmishes. And when you go into a battle, the way they break down is the game will do like a sort of top-down scenario where there will be all the vehicles, your convoy in the middle, and then wherever convoy support you have flanking it, driving down the road. And then enemy vehicles will drive in from either the 4 sides of the screen, and they'll start blasting, just freaking blasting. That's what they do. They're assholes. And at this point, your goal is to protect the convoy and not take too much damage. Spoiler, you're going to take a lot of damage because it's really freaking hard to do like a freaking skirmish and come out semi unscathed. These jerks don't mess around. And the way combat actually works is it's all kind of in real time. So you can select any of the ships. You can't select the convoy itself. It's just going down a straight path. But you can select either of your flank or many of them. You have multiple. You can have like 5 cars or something. But I never could afford that many. I always was broke. Anyway, get cars. And you can select between them and then determine where on the map you want them to go. And when you select it, the car will actually drive to a specific location. You can also determine what other vehicles you want to have them attack. And they automatically strike at that vehicle that is chosen as their target, so long as they are within close enough range to that target. So the usual mechanic in the game is to see guy, target him, and then move your guy to that direction so that he'll eventually just start blasting at the guy. And of course, the enemies are doing the same thing to you. They're assholes. That's what they do. The convoy, while it cannot technically attack, you can equip it with modifications that you can purchase, and it also starts with one where you can use the cross pad to activate it and then choose your target and then boom. Like, for example, one of the beginning things that you get, which is also one of the best, is an EMP, which kind of shorts out the opponent vehicles and makes it so they can't do anything for a little while. Gives you a little bit of time to get some freeze hits in. Now, after a skirmish, you generally get rewards based on what brought about the skirmish in the first place. There's no just like flat out, hey, you got 50 gold or 50 bolts. It's, well, they took all the loot and they apparently blew up in the last car, so you get nothing. That can happen, by the way.
Ouch.
This game is no joke. There's some brutal outcomes sometimes. Now, when you find yourself torn up and mangled, or you really feel as though you need some new gun power or to, you know, strengthen or bolster your vehicle, you can locate a camp by selecting it from your objectives window on the right-hand side of the map. There are main objectives you can choose, and then there's the side objectives. And one of the side objectives is locate nearest camp. When you drop to the camp and walk in, you can go to a screen where you're kind of all parked in front of it, and you can do a few things here. You can upgrade your vehicle, and by upgrading it, you can upgrade it one of five stats. Health, which is health. Armor, which is armor. Handling, how do you handle things? Range of your gun, like I mentioned, like with the auto fire bit. And then mind guard. Mind guard being how much damage you take or how much damage is negated if your vehicle happens to drive over a mine during one of those battles, because that can happen. Also worth mentioning about the battles, I totally forgot. One additional action you can do with vehicles is you can outright ram the enemy vehicles. Ramming does damage to them and to you, but it has some perks. And aside from just the flat-out damage you do, you can also bump a vehicle in a direction. And the reason why this is appropriate is because while vehicles are driving across the screen, sometimes you'll get indicators on the right-hand side telling you that there's a structure ahead, and if you're in front of it, you will blow up. Like, you don't lose health. Your vehicle just dies immediately. But that also applies to the enemy. So you can outright just ram guys into the cliff sides if you really feel like it, or be mindful so you don't do the same thing. Now, back to the shop. You can, again, upgrade any of those five things. You can also purchase new vehicles, repair your vehicle, and acquire new weaponry sometimes, because they have just like a shop at each place. But of course, the shop content is random, both in guns and in cars. Sometimes you'll find a shop that has no guns, or a shop that has no cars, or a shop that has a lot of everything. You never know. Unfortunately, you're always broke, though. But when you do have a little bit of money, it's nice to be able to say, like, I can splurge a little. I'll buy one gun and hope that it does a little bit more for you. Now, the game itself is a lot of fun in that regard. Like, I like the idea that each vehicle has its own stats, but it also has slots that can only be that can only have certain types of equipment locked to it. It's like a yellow slot can only have a yellow slotted gun assisted to it. Red slots are for red slotted guns, and you have to coordinate this. So sometimes you may go to a shop and go, I want that car, but I don't like the weapon slots it has, and all the treasure that I found on my runs is only good for this style of car. I don't want to waste my money on this car because I'm broke. So it ends up being fun in that way. And honestly, as odd as this may sound, I kind of described how the entire game flows. You will drive around, you will counter events, make choices, attack vehicles who are attacking you, sometimes attack vehicles who are just being assholes because you feel like doing that, and then upgrade and don't die. And honestly, that how you feel about that in the grand scheme of things generally depends on you as a player. Because since this is all there is to the game, and of course when you lose a certain number of times, you typically unlock different starting sets of cars. So your convoy might be a little stronger than the previous convoy, or you might have a car that's faster but has less gunpowder, that kind of thing. But at its core, this is the gameplay loop. And if you enjoy said gameplay loop, then there's a lot of love to have in this game. You're just going to be having a lot of skirmishes, fighting over cargo and flux capacitors and errant scientists who bluff you into doing what they want you to do, that kind of stuff. But if you feel as though you need your game to have a lot of variety in gameplay and such like that, you will not find that here. Does that make this a bad game? No, it doesn't. If anything, it just determines this is a very specific thing that you're going to do, and you better like that shit. But honestly, I like that shit. I had a lot of fun playing the game. A lot of frustrating love fun, but fun nonetheless. And while I've never beaten the game in my time playing it, there's no reason why I can't necessarily luck out and follow my way to victory on subsequent playthroughs in the future.
Yeah.
So, and I can keep singing my song every time I boot it up. We're on a great big time, boy!
Nice. Well, overall, $15 on this one. What do you think?
I think it's a quality buy.
Cool. I didn't know if you had more to say or not.
No, this game is... This is one of those reviews I like where it's very easy for me just to, you know, just compartmentalize each aspect of the game and go, here's this, here's that, eat this, drive this, crash into that, reload new game plus, and buy.
Good stuff. All right. Well, moving on, we got to get someone else in here. I'm surprising you guys.
What?
Ooh, child.
We don't do surprises? What is this?
I do surprises because guess who's here?
Hello, kids.
We've got a Norg joining us.
It's a crazy
yes, it's
miracle.
Lovely to hear all of your voices, especially you, Cole. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Sup, yo?
How are you doing, George?
Miracle. I'm bringing cave culture back. That's how it's going.
Going to get that cave out. Never change.
Hey, this is a good time to be stuck in a cave, isn't it?
Oh, that's right.
He's like, yeah. Who's laughing about cave culture now?
See, I'm telling you, you know where it's at, and it's in the cave, and it's all alone.
Mm-hmm. That's what it wants you to think.
That's right. Social isolation is a way of life out here.
Yeah, so, oh, George, how have you been? It's been a while since we've had you on. How's things going in your neck of the woods?
Well, things are going pretty good. We were the start epicenter of this whole nonsense, and now it's spread across the country. And here we are. This is weird, strange, bizarre times. And because I work at what is considered an essential business, I'm still out and about and going to work and getting into adult care facilities with confirmed cases, and it's terrifying.
See, I thought you were going to say, I'm still getting into adult situations. Like, that's not terrifying.
No, adult situation. Well, adult situations are terrifying because I don't want to grow up. But I'm talking about, like, nursing facilities and adult care, memory care places and stuff. Like, when you walk in and they say, oh, by the way, we have a confirmed case in the building. You're like, fuck. Time to put on the gown and the mask and the goggles and get ready to burn it all as soon as you're done.
Yeah. Ashley's got a couple of confirmed cases down at our local hospital. So
I was going to ask about her.
She's doing good. Everything's okay so far. But Darius the Snow in chat just said, just say the damn line, George, and then drop 2 bits.
wet fucking pancakes. Oh, yeah.
I did do it.
Give me those fucking bits.
Now I feel bad that I used mine at the beginning of the show. If I had known this, I would have waited.
Oh, well.
Okay. As long as he gets the bits, to donate more.
Yeah, but I can't.
Bits and bits.
Spending all that money.
Dropping bits. All over your text editor.
Ew! Not on my text editor. Yeah. That's where I keep all my text.
That's right.
Man. Speaking of bits and dropping things, I hear that you're dropping another age in a couple of hours.
Shit. Why'd you have to bring that up?
Because I love you, George. Happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you. As the time of the recording, it's going to be in about 3 hours and 48 minutes.
It's your birthday. It's your birthday.
Happy
it's
birthday.
Yeah. Double fours.
That's not a good roll.
Double fours. I'm going to be 44, man.
Damn.
You gotta be 1,212. That's a good roll.
I should live that long. Holy.
I'm always so glad when somebody's older than me. I'm just sitting over here like, fuck yeah.
I'll always be older than you.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it.
It's fantastic.
Unless.
There's no unless.
I thought about that, too. You ever think about that? Well, no one's ever thought about this because I'm insane. But, like, yeah, they did the Dragon Ball episode. I was like, okay, I got to go train to fight this guy. Time to go into the hyperbolic time chamber. And time works weirdly here. Has it never been the case where no one's out-aged? Like, someone just goes in there for so long, they come up, the son's older than the dad or some shit. Like, whoa, you've been training for a long time. How have you been? Well, I went to college. I graduated. I had two kids. This is your grandfather.
He's been in the hyperbolic time chamber
for the last 20 years.
Yeah. If you ever want to have a good laugh at that concept, find the episode of Family Guy where they brought Walt Disney out of cryogenic freeze. And he asks a question, and then when he gets the answer, he says, "Put me back in."
Oh, my God.
It's not a pleasant thing, so I won't share it on here, but yeah.
It's Family Guy.
Of course, it's Family Guy, what you expect.
I'm going to assume it involves Negroes.
No, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Surprising.
I'm surprised to hear that, because I'm like, that was my first, like, Walt Disney bad thing. I know where this is going.
No, for once. I mean, they skipped right over that one.
Went to a brand new turf.
Yeah.
Uncharted Walt territory.
That's right. There's so much to choose from. He comes from an old era where that stuff was okay. I mean, let's be real.
No.
I mean, it wasn't okay, but we know it now that it was not okay, but it was accepted at the time, if that makes any sense.
Oh, no, for sure. Like, it's one of those where, like, it comes up a lot with me sometimes. Like, I'll be having discussions and someone will bring up, like, a movie that came out eons ago. And I'm like, look, that movie's directly insulting me, and I'm not going to tell you to get rid of the film. The film existed in its time, and that's why the film is okay now, just to have it around. As long as you acknowledge this came from a period where this was okay, but now if you come about talking about how this is a cultural masterpiece, the way that guy spoke to that guy, like, kiss my ass. He's a piece
exactly.
of shit. But back then, no, it was okay, wanna... so watch it in the time it's from, you know?
There's this station that my mom watches all the time, and it has stuff like the Bob Newhart Show and Mary Tyler Moore and the Dick Van Dyke Show and all that. And I was at her house watching Bob Newhart, and, like, he's sitting at the table with his friend, and his wife comes in to serve dinner, like, off of the platter, and I'm like, really? This is the whole serving the husband thing, and we don't have to go much further back than that to stuff like the Honeymooners or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Alice! No, none of that's okay.
Right to the moon! Like, what?
Like, I would admit, right in the kisser!
No.
I'm going to beat the shit out of my wife, and people are going to laugh in the audience.
Right, exactly.
That was all the family. That was all the family.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. No, I'm sorry. The Honeymooners, I meant. But, yeah.
Honeymoon. All in the family. That's a different ball of wax entirely.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, oh, God.
Yes, it is. Though I will admit, I give that show credit because it was more forward-thinking than people give it credit for. Because
it was. I agree with you.
A lot of people don't realize that Archie was the joke on the show. Like, his mentality was not the thing to be appreciated. It was the thing to mock. And all other families were like, hey, Dad, that's old thinking. He's like, yeah, shut your pie hole. See, that's not how it is. Like, no, actually it is. You're behind the times, Archie.
Archie, you gotta get caught up with everything.
It is quite stifling yourself, it is.
Can you imagine that show on today? Like, Archie, check your Fitbit.
Did you see the where they recreated a couple of episodes?
It is the batteries are dead.
What'd you say, Chris?
I said they recreated an episode with a modern cast, Woody Harrelson as Archie Bunker.
Oh no!
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was done live too, and then they did an episode of The Jeffersons with Jamie Foxx as George Jefferson.
Oh man!
And where can I find this?
Yeah, seriously.
I Google it. It's on one. I think it was TBS that put it on. They put it on live. I think it's like all on something streaming. But yeah, it was pretty interesting because they did not. They didn't change a single word in the dialogue. For that reason, they were like, we want to, like, show you what, you know, how this would seem today with the exact, like, dialogue it used to have. And naturally, it's problematic to say the least.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of it has not aged well. But
well, no, but I mean, yeah, it was controversial at the time, too.
That's true, too. Now, the Jeffersons were controversial at the time, just for the subject matter of an African-American couple being successful. Like,
yeah.
But and they tackled a lot of those subjects on that show.
Oh, yeah. I know. I love the Jeffersons. Like,
directly. Or if you want to go back to the 80s with Different Strokes and you have the rich guy who adopts the two black kids and all of the trouble that he and them ran into and how they hit it head on.
Mm-hmm. Different Strokes was the shit.
Yeah, it was.
Loved
it. Oh, man. Talk about a whole cast of people that did not end well.
That's for sure.
Holy shnikes.
Oh, man.
It exists in a weird nebulous.
Like how Carnage says, fuck video games. SML apparently now covers classic TV shows and movies.
Yeah.
Damn right. It's the like everything. It's untapped potential right there. The SML telecast.
Yes.
No one has ever talked about old TV shows before.
No one ever does that.
No.
Not at all. Man.
We how probably should we talk about games, that? Though. George, we have you here to take care of a review. We should probably get to that, huh?
Yes, indeedy. Feed the needy.
All right, because the next game to talk about is called Operencia, The Stolen Sun, developed and published by Zen Studios, released March 31st on Switch, PS4, and Steam for $29.99. Operencia, The Stolen Sun embraces everything you love about classic first-person dungeon crawlers, enhancing the old-school turn-based RPG experience with modern sensibilities. Guide a team of memorable characters through a world inspired by Central European mythology. George, tell us about Operencia.
So I gotta ask something. Is Zen Productions' goal to like take over every genre of video gaming?
I believe so, yes.
That's good because they're on the right track. I mean, they started great with all the pinball stuff, which I love. And now we've gotten into this first person adventure RPG kind of thing. And they are kicking ass at this. Holy cow. Yeah, this game is a hoot and a holler. I'll start with my usual things. I categorize my experience with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'll start with the ugly. There isn't a damn thing that was ugly about this game. Not one thing.
Wow.
No crashes, no necessary updates. Nothing was broken that I was able to get to a point where something would break and I would want to rage quit. So the bar is low, but yeah, there... Nothing awful happened. Let me get into the bad category so I can save the good stuff for last. Bits of the actual gameplay experience seemed a little bit unbalanced. And part of that had to do with the fact that there was no real grind that I was able to find where like, okay, I feel like my characters are a little bit too low level, so I need to get some experience, do a little grinding. It seemed like all of the encounters were preordained, and once you finish those encounters, that's it. So that there isn't any grinding opportunity to do the typical thing where you super overpower and off you go. Having said that, some of the battles that you have to sit through took way too long. I'll cite the example of there's some spider creatures where you show up and there are like three or four of them. And as you damage one of these giant spiders, it decides to eat one of the other spider creatures. And not only does it replenish its own health, but its health is increased like sevenfold or something. And so as soon as that happens, and it happens with two of them, you're like, all right, I know what I'm doing for the next 7 minutes of boring rounds. So that was a little bit on the tedious side. The fact that the game made it really easy to rest at campfires and save, and it took a little bit of the fear out of that style of game, where in other games of that genre, you would expect to have a little bit of fear and maybe not necessarily knowing where your next meal is coming from. And by that, I mean like, okay, where's my next save point? Am I going to make it through this next gauntlet? And it seemed necessary to have that because of some of those ultimately low level spider creatures, for example, where by the time you're done with the 7 minutes, you have gone through the ringer, you're low on hit points and magic. And it's like, oh, that's one combat. And now we got to go rest up. So yeah, that kind of sucked. item collection was a little bit confusing. There are a ton of items, and it's really difficult to tell which ones are better, which ones are worse. There was a lot of generic to them, and it seemed like the upgrades may or may not have been upgrades. It wasn't easily evident, so it was difficult to tell exactly what was happening on that point. So in exploring the world, there are items that you pick up under certain circumstances, and some of those items have cursor points that are so tiny, I almost put that in the ugly category, because with the Switch's controls, as sensitive as they are, it's like, okay, I'm going to get, no, went too far. Okay, I'm going to go, darn it, too far. Okay, no, don't, good, just, no, wait, don't, fuck! So, that was a little frustrating at times. And that was just to pick up 34 gold coins. I mean, to like, come on, work with me here. Okay, so that's the end of my bad category. Now let's get on to the good stuff. This game, I feel, brings out some of the best elements of what you would expect from games like the original Bard's Tale trilogy, games like Etrian Odyssey, Lands of Lore, Grimrock, that genre of game. It's great, and it feels exactly like you would expect that genre of game to feel. The only difference is that it's a little bit on the dark side in terms of the graphics, so either turn up the brightness on your screen or play it in the dark to get the full impact of what they put into this game. And it's worth it because the art in this game is stunning. It never got old or repetitive or boring. The landscapes are gorgeous as you get through it. The music was fantastic. The voice acting was actually good for once. I'm not used to that coming out of a lot of these games, and Zen did a fantastic job getting great voice actors for this, especially because there's a lot of dialogue between characters, including the main character Avatar, which under a lot of games you don't hear from very often. It feels like the main character Avatar is just kind of there, and then the secondary and tertiary characters all kind of talk to each other and blah blah blah, ha ha ha, la la la, laugh, whatever. But the main character actually talks and has things to say in what are sometimes absolutely hilarious lines of dialogue. A lot of care went into this game, and it shows, and it's fun, and it's a great experience playing. This is going to be one of those ones where once the review's over, I'm probably going to keep playing it and enjoying it.
That is very good to hear.
I wish I had more to say.
I didn't know if you had more or not. So overall, $30 on this one, what are you thinking?
Oh, $30. If you are a fan of those games, Etrian Odyssey, Grimrock, Lands of Lore, Old School Bard's Tale, absolutely get this game. You're going to love it.
I love Etrian Odyssey.
Right? It even has the mapping feature. Okay, let me go back again. There are ways to make this game more difficult than it already is. When you're setting it up, you have the option to do things like, are the monsters more difficult or are they less difficult? Will the mapping be automatically done, or is that going to be disabled? I'm a wuss. So I had the maps turned on. I had the monsters at whatever their lowest level was. I was not interested in the hardcore experience. I just wanted to really enjoy this game, and I really enjoyed it. If I were super hardcore, I'd probably try to go back and maybe disable the map, but that just sounds too much like work.
Yeah.
Speaking of, that reminds me that you were talking about a 7-minute, battle that's, really boring. The first major boss battle in Etrian Odyssey 3 took me 2.5 hours to beat.
Oh, my gosh. Are
you talking about that mudfish?
One attempt, yes. The mudfish.
He is an asshole.
Are you kidding?
I loved him. I loved it, though. Once I beat him, I was like, yes.
I mean, I remember Lagoth Xanta in Bard's Tale 2 taking, 2.5-3 hours, but yeah. Nothing like that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was rough, but it was great.
Did you have 5 farmers or something?
No, it was just like my first time through. I didn't know what to expect, but I had a team that could survive most things, so we just survived for that long. Plus, he escaped attrition. Remember, you have to chase him around and fight him again and again until you finally dwindle away all his life. And then later on, you get a special item if you can one-shot him.
Oh my god.
Which eventually I did. And that's what I love about Etrian Odyssey, is that you go from 2.5 hours to one-shotting the same boss in the same game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, that's all I had to say.
Chris, it sounds like
what system was Etrian Odyssey 3 on?
3 was the last of the DS games.
Okay.
Before it moved on to... Also,
the hardest one.
I guess so. It was the first one I beat, actually.
Yeah, I think the only one I played was... What was it called? Millennial Girl, and that was on 3DS.
That was the remake of 1, so it was like...
Oh, really?
1 was really hard, but the Millennium Girl, like, they fixed a lot of the stuff that made it so hard. Like, they made it more forgiving and stuff, so...
I gotcha.
It was a more forgiving version and an updated, like, you know, with an actual storyline version of the first game, which I also...
Okay.
Classic variant in there, too. Like, if you're like, you know, if you don't want all that, you still want a bit of a challenge. They left that in there, but...
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
that was really cool. A lot of options in playing that game. I said Millennial Girl. That was a mistake. I'm sorry.
Millennium Girl, but it's fine. I like Millennial Girl, too.
They're all
cool. Man. Well, George, thank you as always for coming on and doing your thing. We love having you on here.
Anytime. My pleasure.
Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Drop some more fucking bits. Do it.
Pancakes.
Oh, beautiful. Pancakes. Have yourself a wonderful night, George, and happy birthday once again. Did he leave?
I think so.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he was still there.
Is he gone?
I was looking at the wrong monitor. I looked down, and yeah, he's gone.
He's gone. Oh, man. All right. Next game to talk about is called Cat Girl Without Salad Amuse Bouche, developed and published by WayForward, released April 1st on the Switch for $7.99. Blast everything that moves in this genre-defying action extravaganza. Take control of Kabako, a cat-eared intergalactic bounty hunter, as she patrols the galaxies with her faithful companion Squiddle in search of ridiculous space criminals. Chris, this was a kind of like an April Fool's joke from WayForward that turned out to be real. So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, man, you stole my factoid. <Just kidding. laughs> I was going to mention that, but that's okay. Yes, this is a game that started as a joke and then it became a game and then it became a joke. Let's go on. So this is a game that is in the shmup genre. And I'm trying to remember the main character's name, but it's rolling credits right now because I just beat it while George was doing his review.
Kabako,
thank you. Yes, Kabiko, or what? Yeah, I guess, yeah, Kabako.
However you say it.
Yeah, so she is a ridiculously over-the-top girl / cat / robot / angel demon? Because she's got like a little bit of every trope combined in her, and of course her personality is the classic Excel Saga, just completely stupid person.
Oh god.
But who also, through the power of the narrative, is extremely accomplished and powerful. And the game has you play through 3 stages. Each one you're seeking a bounty. But what's really happening is that you're being pursued by somebody who Kabako has done wrong to unknowingly in the past. So it kind of ends. It doesn't really have a story, but as much as it talks to you, that's the framing of it, is that she's a bounty hunter and she's going after these people to put them in space jail. You know, the first is a musician who is in love with her, and so his stage is, you fly through stages, and like any shmup, which I don't need to explain to you, is short for shoot 'em up, in which you...
I had no idea.
I know, in which you are one ship against a multitude of other ships. But yeah, no, it's a horizontal shmup thing, and you go through these stages, and actually, like Unicorns, Toilets, and Rainbows, which I covered before, it's... one of those kind of things where it's like, and this is what I like about shmups too, is that it's a genre that inspires so much experimentation, because you can put so much stuff into it, because the interface is literally just, you know, you move around the screen and shoot things, and or just hold down the shooting button and let things come to you, and you know, you can turn that into a lot of things. So in you know, whereas a scathing satire of like modern life, that, you know, unicorns, rainbows, and unicorns, toilets, and rainbows, gotta get the order right, goes, this one kind of attempts a little more of, rather than satire, just like parody. And, you know, again, as a game that started out as a joke, like, I really have to, like, appreciate the ways that they stretched, like, what ridiculous things you can do in the game. And while that's not really done in the backgrounds, like, the backgrounds, to me, are like reading the book Ready Player One, if you've ever done so. I don't recommend it. But, you know, it's just like, here's some things that are vaguely related to the thing that we said it is. So it's the radical level. So it's lightning bolts and cassette tapes. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
And musical notes. And
I remember those.
There's Rad McGator, a gator with sunglasses, you know? And then they, you know, the levels have the characters constant, like the two characters, the main characters are, you know, Katako, I can't remember her name now, but, her talking to Squiddy, which is her like ship, person, like, you know, basically her headquarters, the person back home, and, which is a robot squid, of course. And, you know, they just make commentary throughout the stages, about this stuff. And the commentary is usually pretty funny. Like, the character herself is very funny. Like, cause again, she embodies the stupid trope so well. And she's, by the way, because it's a way forward game and is made by like about, you know, seems like half the Shantae team. Her voice is Christina V, who is, you know, of course, nice. The voice of Shantae. Which I guess I'm pronouncing that right. Shantae.
That's how I say it. Shantae.
Shantae.
I say sachet myself.
Sachet. Okay. That's fine. And, but yeah, they quip through the levels, the backgrounds are, you know, whatever. And, but then you get the weapons, which are, I think, the main draw for the personality of this game. The weapons are absolutely ridiculous. And like I said, very, very experimental. So each one embodies a kind of genre of video games. I'm going to just, you know, rote describe some of them. Your straightforward shot is the pea shooter. And then you have the arcade gun, which sends out a parody of a Pac-Man type character to eat the characters on the screen. And instead of shooting many of them, you just shoot one of them and control it with the face buttons on the right side of the controller and just have it eat enemies while you're dodging like bullets and stuff. simultaneously. And then like there's the dance gun, which puts a DDR rectangle, not rectangle, I'm sorry, you know, a square on the screen, and arrows start flying towards it, and you have to push the corresponding face button to those arrows to get a good straight shot. Otherwise it's just like this little pea shooter shot that goes off into nowhere. And so, like, you actually have to be watching these arrows while watching the enemies, while aiming your shots and dodging their shots, and dodging salads, of course, because salads do damage to you.
Makes sense.
Like, yeah. Instead of, it's one of those kind of games where you can take multiple shots, like you have hearts on the screen, and if you eat something that's junk food, then it restores a heart, and if you eat a salad, then it takes away a heart. She's basically allergic to anything healthy.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and then there's the sports gun, which just shoots a bunch of golf balls that you know, like, it just has a persistently aiming, like, reticule thing that, like, you then shoot golf balls and they bounce off parts of the screen and hit enemies. Then there's the most interesting one to me, the RPG gun, which of course shows a gun blade as its icon. It pulls up a menu that says attack, magic, heal, and run. And if you choose to attack, she goes towards the enemies with a sword swinging, and it says, like, you know, minus 2,000 points, and then the enemy, you know, eats it. And you can use, like, magic attacks, which just throws a bottle of magic at the enemies. And, again, it does, like, hit points damage. And, like I said, you have to scroll through the menu. You can also heal yourself, of course, with the heal command. And they all have to be recharged after a while. You only get so many of them. But, and then there's the freaking puzzle gun, which has you playing Bust a Move in order to shoot enemies. And if the balls, of course, get stuck together because, you know, that's, if you've never played Bust a Move or Puzzle Bobble, you won't know what I'm talking about. But basically, it's running like all these colored balls together, and if you match three of them, then it causes an explosion that, you know, knocks all the enemies off the screen. And then you have a thing that you, that lets you aim it. And then the platforming gun, which sends a platforming mascot that looks suspiciously like Mega Man out there, and you can jump at enemies, and things like that. And yeah, that's pretty much all the weapons. So my thing about the weapons is that they're all extremely creative and none of them are good. none of them make the game any better or like are much stronger than your just regular pea shooter. So often what I ended up doing is dodging power-ups, which I was like, that doesn't feel right to do in a shmup, but okay. Cause like, there's no way to upgrade like anything. It's just like, those are the weapons. And, you know, you pick them up from enemies on Famicom cartridges, of course, or, if you've beaten the game once, which I'll get to that in just a second, you can actually choose a mode where you have all of them available and you can just scroll through them freely. Yeah, the only one I ended up liking a little bit was the arcade gun, just because, you know, it actually does kind of resemble something that you might see in a shmup, which is the bullet that you can control after the fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, so yeah, and then, you get to the characters. Honestly, like I said, the characters are fine. The main character is very funny and, you know, expertly voice acted by a very professional voice actor. And the there's only one other voice actor, and he's the dude. He plays the two dudes that are in the game, one of which is very funny and very confusing. So he exists in the RPG galaxy, which I was like, okay, this will be funny because I love RPGs. Of course, the background is just keys and 20-sided die and random numbers and like the words experience and levels and stuff on it. Like, that's it. Like, that's the joke. You know about RPGs, right? 20-sided die, am I right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the enemies have good pun names, though, actually. There's a there's an enemy called it's a crab that shoots water, and it's called a Crabohydrate. And I'm like, okay, well, they got that Dragon Quest like level pun thing going on there. But the best part of that stage is the character who is not like, all of the dialogue has to do with like this rogue chef that's running around. And it's like this trope of like the angry, you know, like the angry elitist chef, which is to me like, okay, that's more of a British thing, but, and not very funny, but okay, go on. But then he shows up and his name is Chefinoff. And you get the joke as soon as you see him, and as soon as the music, written by Jake Kaufman, by the way, Vert, because it's a way forward game. Yeah, the music comes in, and it's this amazing operatic song that's like really dire, and it comes in with like Chefinoff, like that kind of stuff, and it's hilarious. And so it's like there's so like that kind of like encapsulates the game for me, because some of the high points are really high, but as a shmup, I was just like, eh, you know, like, it really does play more like just a joke than something that, like, you know, is a joke that turned into a game. It's like, they went for all this stuff, but, you know, I think that this wasn't like their, I don't know that this was their focus, really, because the game, for one, is a demo. It's very, very short. There are three levels, that's it. After which you can unlock two things, the ability to switch between all of these, like I said, backup weapons that are extremely amusing to watch, not so much to play with, and an invincibility mode that just makes you completely invincible that I actually discovered by accident, because the game wouldn't tell you what happened. It just makes a sound if you push the dash button twice on the menu, which I was just doing because I was trying to figure out how to get to other parts of the menu. Turns out it's... you have to go like to the middle and then down, and then it has to be through the D pad, which I don't know. And the other thing is that, like, you know, so for, you know, as much as I like the soundtrack, I would have liked to be able to hear it, because there's no volume control in the game. The voices are pitched way louder than everything else. Whereas I was like, okay, well, I've heard this dialogue already, and, you know, I don't need to hear it again. I would like to hear this music. And the music's kind of, like, way in the background. And I'm like, they should put an option in there somewhere. And it was like while trying to find that option that I accidentally toggled invincible mode and I thought I broke the game.
Nice.
Yeah, you know. So, yeah, it's one of these things. It's apparently, and they even say it in the game itself, is that it's the first part of a planned series that I think is going to end up being a trilogy. So I'm guessing that, you know, it's like a 1/16th slice off of like Shovel Knight kind of thing. And eventually you're going to end up with 3/16ths of a Shovel Knight. They mentioned that there's going to be 6 more levels. But they don't say whether that's going to be another game or an expansion to this game. So yeah, I kind of like don't understand what's really going on with this game other than there's a lot of good stuff in here. But, you know, like I said, ultimately it doesn't come together in quite the way that you expect.
Yeah.
And I feel like I basically talked about this game long enough to have played through the entirety of it. It's about it's seriously about a 15 to 20 minute long game. So,
damn.
Yeah.
Well, $8 on it. What do you think?
$8. I mean, it's hard to sell it at that as a demo. I think the fact that it's way forward and that it's really actually amusing. Like, basically what I'm going to say is do buy it because it's absolutely worth seeing and playing. Like I said, the points that they, the experiments and the points, like a lot of them really hit it out of the park. And I actually think this is a game that people should experience, but, you know, go in with the knowledge that this game is like an experiment. It's, like I said, it's a joke that turned into a game and then turned back into a joke. You know, it's not deep and it's fun, albeit it does have some frame rate issues as well, which is kind of not great for a shooter that's only got 3 levels in it. But it can definitely, with some of the with the upgrades and weapons and stuff, it can crawl, like, you know, and not in a good way either, like Gradius, like more like it starts getting choppy, which maybe they'll patch that or something. But I have a feeling that this is going to get expanded into something really good. And I really hope it does, because I actually really like the characters and the writing and the music for what I could hear. And so I hope they keep going with this, and I hope that people buy it. But this is not their, like, best work. Not from the people who made Shantae and Shovel Knight.
Well, they didn't make Shovel Knight. That's Yacht Club.
Oh, that's right. Yes, they just... Didn't they... Wait, did they publish it? No.
No.
No, no, no. I'm thinking of something else. I think it's just the Vert association. No, they remade DuckTales, and that was really good.
Yeah.
Like, they make some really good games, and I feel like this one could be great. I think they need to work on it.
All right. Well, we're going to keep the cat theme going with Inbento, developed by Afterburn, published by 7 Levels, released March 12th on the Switch for $4.99. Experience a calming, wordless story about cats and parenthood by solving adorable puzzles in Inbento. Relax, tease your brain, and prepare tasty bento dishes. Arrange them in an elaborate lunchbox while sticking to the recipe shown on the screen. Chris, tell us about Inbento.
Okay, so Inbento is another game that is about cats, but not. So this game is basically, yeah, there's a mama cat who is making bento lunches for her little babies and whoever else. The story is told through, like, straight up just Polaroids of, you know, showing this cat doing things. And the actual gameplay is basically you get into the screen and there's a bento box in front of you. And on the dish at the bottom of the screen, there are basically kind of like blocks. Like, think of them like as Tetris blocks, but, you know, each one is 3 pieces of food. And on the right side of the screen, it shows you basically what you are making. And you have to follow the recipe exactly to get this thing to look like that thing. So you'll end up with, you know, 3 pieces of, you know, different things like fish and rice and, you know, a vegetable or whatever. And in arranging them, basically, like I said, you're trying to get it to look like the picture. And as the levels go by, you know, that just becomes more and more complex. There's certain things that you can do. Like, you can turn and rotate the actual foods. Sometimes you can switch them. You can switch stuff around on them. Sometimes you can't turn them and you have to actually lay them down in a certain way. If they have these black dots on the edges of the corners. And, you know, different rules apply. Like, you know, if you put one thing in and then put another thing on top of that thing, whatever you put on second overrides the first. And so you can kind of use that to make all these pieces, you know, none of which look like the actual dish, to, like, you know, you put, like, the ones that, that look right, you know, on the bottom, and then you fill it in on the top, and then that, you know, gets it to work. And like I said, they just get increasingly, more and more complex. They're pretty fun, like, to figure out, like, basically, like, it's putting together puzzles in an interesting way, like, kind of like 3D puzzles, if that makes any sense. But yeah, it's, that's all there is to the game. It is calming. You know, it's cartoony, and like I said, you get pictures of cats every now and then.
Which is good.
Which is good, of course. And yeah, there's 127 levels, so
that's a lot of game for $5. So $5 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, $5. I mean, go for it. It's if you like puzzle games, this is an interesting take on it, and I thought it was very fun.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Next game to talk about is called Miles and Kilo. I hope Purnell.
Oh, I'm not here. What are you talking about? Miles and Hulo? Who Kilo? Shit, kid.
I will
fucking
cut you.
You know he ain't played
you.
This shit.
I know yesterday I said I wasn't going to be able to make the joke. I lied. I made the joke. But the funny thing is the review I did last week, quote unquote, actually was pretty much accurate. Because this game is basically Adventure Island with a fresh coat of paint.
Well, I got to do the details first. I'm just making sure that you're ready on it.
Ah, crap!
Do you not listen to the show as we're recording it?
Why would I listen to the show as we're recording it?
Yeah, very
true. That would be very difficult.
But yeah, Miles and Kilo, developed and published by Four Horses, released March 26th on the 3DS for $7.99. Miles and Kilo have been attacked by a mischievous specter with their plane in pieces and a gang of thieving scoundrels running off with the important parts. The unfortunate duo's only hope of escape is to embark on a thrilling chase across a haunted island. Purnell, tell us about Miles and Kilo.
Miles and Kilo are Hudson's Adventure Island 1 if you were a boy and his doll. That is the game, and I mean that in a very flattering way. So the game's a lot of fun. Each is five areas or so. Each one is covered by seven stages. And on each level, your goal is to run from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen, scrolling, of course, and get to the goal as fast as you can. As you are trying to traverse the levels, enemies abound, and your functions are you can jump, you can hold down the button for a higher jump, you can slide, and you can throw fruit. And that's basically how you traverse the level. So you're basically hopping around, bopping things, sliding through things, hitting things with fruit. At the end of every level, of course, there is a sort of ranking where, depending on if you beat the level quickly enough, if you beat the level with your full supply of fruit, because you can have a total of full five of fruit in storage at a time. If you beat the level with a full supply of that, that's good for your score. And also every coin, if you pick up every coin on a stage, you get credit for that. And that's how you pretty much get S ranks on levels. It's by maxing all those things out. Now, in addition to the normal style levels, there's also the occasional level or situation, because they mix and match the stuff sometimes, where Kilo, asking which one, I don't even remember which one is which. That's the funny part. The dog.
I think Kilo's the dog.
Yeah. Oh, Miles okay. is the guy, Kilo's the dog.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Every once in a while, Kilo will allow you to take control of him. And when he takes control, he pretty much auto runs the stage, and you're tasked with then just evading obstacles by jumping over them. He also does like a homing dash, kind of like how Sonic would do it, where you can dash into a guy, and if you hold on the jump button after colliding, you get like a bit of a higher hop to lead to the next target. And you can also kind of barrel roll through bricks. Similar goals in mind for getting an S rank on his levels or levels that involve him, but he plays a little differently. My first bit of advice as far as the game is concerned, if you want to play this, just go into the menu options and turn auto run on, because honestly, there's no reason not to have it on. It's there for people who want to. It does not have auto run-ons there for people who like want to have the ability to finesse stuff like jumps and all. And that's good if you're just like kind of having fun and putzing around in the game. But by way of how all the times are broken down on the levels to get a good score, they're designed for auto run or never letting go of the run button. So essentially, just save your cross pad to hurt just turn on auto run and focus solely on jumping and doing all the context sensitive actions, the fruit throwing and the sliding and the punching. But honestly, once I turned that on, I actually was happier about it. And I pretty much was like cleaning up on the S rankings. Not to say that the game is easy, though, because I died a lot. But it's one of those games I like where you don't have like an actual live system. The game just throws you right back in. It does keep track of how many times you died on the level, but it's there solely just to show you this is how bad you sucked. But then you win, and that's great. So it's all right. But honestly, this game surprised me. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I even like the music. The music is actually a bopper, too.
I like the music.
Yeah, like I can see myself playing this, like playing the music from this game in the future for sure. I wouldn't mind seeing another game from them like this. Maybe add some dinosaurs, not dinosaurs, but you know what I mean. Like it, wherever it the is, Miles and Kilo universe would be.
It is it's the second in a series. The first game is called Kid Trip.
Yep.
Ooh, I do remember seeing images for Kid Trip.
But now I gotta doesn't play listen that. To our interviews either.
Yeah, I could tell.
How about everybody stop being mean to me?
Try being supportive, Pernell.
I'm supportive by showing you love. I love all of you.
You don't not if you don't listen to the show that we work so hard.
Admittedly.
Blood, sweat, tears, and wet pancakes into.
If it makes you feel any better, I don't listen to any shows I do. I just like being on them.
I was going to say, I didn't listen to the interview either. I just played Kid Trip.
It's like a weird thing where like, I'm always like, you should listen to the show, Pernell, because I have another show. The guy on the co-host will be like, hey, bro, have you ever listened to the show? I'm like, I'm on the show. I don't hear it. I'm on it. I'm good. But it's everybody's awesome. You guys are great. Kid Thanks, Trip, I need to play. You know, man. Now, let's talk about Family Matters.
No, Miles and Kilo, $8. What do you think?
I think it's a buy. It's a great time.
Awesome. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Random Heroes Gold Edition, developed by WobblyWare, published by Rattalaika Games. Released March 31st on PS4 and Vita, April 1st on Xbox One, April 3rd on the Switch for $4.99. The Earth is being invaded by terrifying aliens. It's up to you and a bunch of random heroes to save the day and stop the invasion. Shoot and jump your way through over 100 levels to stop the alien menace and bring peace to the planet. Will you be able to survive? Chris, tell us about Random Heroes.
Okay, so Random Heroes. I actually meant to look up the developer of this game because it looks so familiar. Like, I know I have to have played something else by WobblyWare or something.
You have. I know we've covered other of their games before.
Yeah, I forgot
Old Man's Journey, apparently. Huh. Braveland. Giganosaur, Braveland, the game. It appears they even worked on... Hold on a second.
WobblyWare? Devious are Dungeon. You looking at the right thing?
It says, this is says, people also search for it. Okay, it's not showing. No, it's supposed to show what else they worked on.
Yeah, because they did Devious Dungeon, Daggerhood, Gravity Duck, Omega Strike, League of Evil.
Gravity Duck's the one that I covered before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I like that one.
Google let me down. They changed it. I'm mad about this.
I think you did Devious Dungeon 2 as well.
Yes. Well, I only did two. I have one on the wish list. I'm going to buy it at some point. You know how it is. So, yes, this game is a lot like Devious Dungeons. No, I'm just kidding. Please refer to my Devious Dungeon 2 review. So this is a run and gun, just a platform shooter where basically you have your two commands. You have shoot and jump. And there are zombies walking around. Oh, my God. Zombies.
No, they're aliens. But I thought they were zombies, too.
That's right. They are aliens. I keep forgetting because they look exactly like
zombies. They look very much like zombies.
Very much. And but there's a pretty good mix. I guess there's, like, worms and stuff and, like, you know, big guys and everything. So, at first... So, like, this is a game that's, like, you're not going to appreciate within the first 20 minutes or so. Because, you know, it says you have random characters, and you have random weapons, or, you know, like, it's whatever. as you go through and play the game as the generic guy, the first guy that you play, actually all the characters are kind of generic. They just follow tropes. There's no like specific person, even though one of them looks exactly like Abraham Lincoln. he's quote unquote gentleman. But when you get your initial guy and your initial gun, it's just like this little rinky dink little gun that literally takes 12 shots to take down the weakest enemy. I have never seen this slow of a start in a game like this before. And yeah, like apart from shooting enemies, your job is to get from one door to the other door, you know, just basically left to right, until you run into a boss, which will end the entire like world, quote unquote. But there's a lot of levels within each world. But yeah, like when you shoot enemies, then they drop coins. There's also coins that are scattered throughout the level. And those coins are basically the exact coins from Devious Dungeon 2. That's why I was like, I know I played something else by these guys recently. And yeah, I was just staring right at me. Now the thing is, once you get enough, you know, a few hundred dollars, which is not going to be easy because the coins are available in denominations of 1 or 5. So you have to collect them for quite a while, which is why I'm saying the first 20 minutes of the game are a little slow. Then you can start unlocking guns. And that's great, because then each gun is way, way better. Although it will take you, you know, it'll take you some thousands of dollars to unlock a gun that will take down even the most basic enemy in 3 or less hits. So, again, it's one where you're pumping a lot of bullets, basically. But then, like, basically, you have a 3-star system, just like, you know, Milo and Kunis.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, God. That's the new name of the game going forward for me.
Yeah, Milo and Kunis. But anyways, so, like that, you have a 3-star system, whereby if you can get from the left door to the right door and, not get hit for one, or sometimes it's just have your full life. It seems inconsistent there. I'm not exactly sure.
I think it's not getting hit.
Yeah. Don't get hit.
But sometimes I've gotten a med pack and the star lights back up.
Really? Because so,
I have not been fortunate enough for that to happen.
That's what I'm saying. It happened like, but not often enough that I felt like it was a predictable thing. Anyways. So, once you get enough of these stars, like I said, I think one is for, that, the other is for defeating all the enemies or getting all the gold coins or something. And then the last one's just beating the level. As you get more stars, the stars allow you to unlock more characters. And
wait, do you get one for just beating the level? Cause I was beating levels with no stars.
Well, then it must not be that then. There's not a whole lot of feedback the game. There's not a whole lot of feedback the game gives you. Do you know how long it took me to figure out how to access the shop screen when it's right there in the pause menu?
Oh, no.
It was like
user error.
I know that was user error because there's one sign in the second level that tells you how to access the shop, and I just breezed right past it, you know. And then I was like in 7 levels in, and I was like, how do I change this gun? I am tired of shooting enemies. And by that time, I'd saved up enough money for the best gun in level 1, so I was, you know, it was good. Like, that's the one thing, though, is that, like, some guns not only are locked by money, they're also, you have to progress enough in the game to unlock it as well.
Yeah.
So it's, but, you know, every time now, after that I have gotten through a series of stages, I've been able to afford the best gun right away, so that's nice. And then, of course, your characters are, you switch characters by basically backing out of the game, but then once you back out of the game, you can come back into the game anytime, and you can actually grind up money and things like that. So if you're not particularly good and you just want to keep replaying the easiest levels, you'll eventually, you know, buy your way into victory, or at least a really good loadout. And then, yeah, there's like several different worlds. I think it's like 9 or something like that, and each one has like, I guess, 11 or something stages in it, if it's 100 stages. But yeah, like, it's actually pretty amusing. I like the heroes. And what I like about the fact, you know, that you can change all these characters into generic things like hobo or mime or ninja, or like, I just now unlocked the general.
Nice.
Oh, and let's see, who is this? Dino. So you can also be a dinosaur or a guy in a dinosaur suit. What I like about the characters is that they actually do have different stats that radically affect the game. Your speed stat actually determines how fast you can move. Of course, you have a damage stat and a health stat, and I think there's more stats as well, maybe. Those seem to be the only three, though. But yeah, each one unlocks at a certain amount of stars. And yeah, you get the stars from beating the stage as well, and you get this, you know, you beat the stage as well by picking the right gun and character for the job. So that's kind of like what really makes this game, I think, pretty fun, is the fact that you're, you know, constantly progressing towards getting a all these unlocked characters that are, like I said, amusing, and some of them are better than others. You know, each one will suit your play style. I personally like the agent, who looks like a half man, half cyborg kind of person, but he does really high speed and damage, but no health. He's a glass cannon, and I like glass cannon characters. So I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good, especially if I'm going for that no damage star. It's like, that's the one to pick. So yeah, like, I actually, you know, as a shooter platformer thing, it's not the strongest. For instance, enemies always stick to their flight plan. They do not deviate. If an enemy, like, and that, you know, of course you can manipulate that to your advantage. So, like, for instance, when there's some enemies that might have a gun and they'll shoot at you, but only if they're facing you. So just wait till they're walking the other way and just pump them full of bullets, because, you know, they're not going to turn around until they're scripted to turn around. So, like, you know, the enemies don't really seem to have any AI. Some of them will, like, just chase you, but that's about it. So, despite that, though, the game is actually pretty hard. Like, and if you die, you do have to start the entire stage over. And, you know, that's difficult for a glass cannon character. However, any money that you've gotten up to that point, they let you keep half of it per life. So, again, constant progression definitely saves this game from being, you know, kind of a slog.
Nice. Cole, I know you put some time into it. What did you think?
I did. I completed it because it's a Rattalica and it's an easy completion.
Oh,
and
yeah. We'll talk about trophies too. Yeah.
You only have to get like a third of the way through the game to actually get all the achievements, you know, because it's a Rattalica. So that's just kind of the way the cookie crumbles there. But I actually did enjoy playing it. I don't think it's one of those, it's not one of those shooter platformers where you're like, this is awesome, I'm super invested into it, I give a fuck about the story, but it's one of those where you're like, I'm okay going through this for about an hour or two and just kind of mowing things down mindlessly. Like, I tend to look at Rattalica games, achievements aside, I like to look at them as like palate cleansers. You play a whole lot of really hard, daunting games that require a lot of thought or skill, and then along comes Rattalica and like, you know what, for $5, put your feet up.
Yeah.
Take a minute.
This is very much a game that you can just zone out with.
And I didn't mind doing that. Like, I was sitting here, I literally had my feet up. I was kicked back in my chair. And I'm like, I'm just going to blast through this, get some more achievements because I was on a roll today, and just knock it all out and be like, whatever. I thought that there was quite a bit of variety, though, as you get into it. Some of the levels really do a good job of changing up. Spikes are introduced here, and, you know, water traps, which will slow you down as the enemies come charging at you. That was something to keep an eye out for. The way that you have to maneuver around the levels, there's no achievement for it, but you can find crystal skulls, and they'll actually give you more health, which is vital if you're because you do have to take on the damn bosses. You know, there was quite a lot to be had, even though it was one of those mindless sit back games. And I didn't mind it at all. I had a really good time with it.
Yeah, I agree. Ultimately, it, you know, it's pretty fun to like just sit there and like play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not going to be, it's not like what's that game that everybody likes? Blazing Chrome.
You know, I'm not going to load it up tomorrow and trudge through it beyond the completion. But I mean, for what I did today, I was like, yeah, this isn't bad. I'm good.
Yeah, like, and I like the grind. See, I like grindy games, and this is definitely a grindy game.
It's there. Yeah, if you want to dive into it, it's definitely there.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, $5 on it. What do you two think?
I think worth it. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm fine giving it a buy it. Normally, yeah. I'd be like, well, that's a rat leg. Fuck it. Why not? But no, I think there's enough there to hold its weight that it's like, no, it's fine. Give it $5. Buy it.
Yeah. I like WobblyWare. I like their games. I think it was another solid one of theirs, and it's $5. It's worth picking up.
Gravity Duck is a good one. I mean, they make good platformers, and that's fine.
I like WobblyWare. Yeah. I will gladly pick up Devious Dungeon 3 whenever that comes out.
Yeah, I will say I did like Devious Dungeon 2 more than this, but I like them both a lot, so it's all good. And I still have Devious Dungeon 1 on my wish list, so I'll be giving him my money sooner or later.
Nice.
You know, when we're all more secure in our place in the world at this point.
We'll get there eventually. We'll see. I hope.
Yeah.
We'll take the great big convoy.
Yeah. Oh,
Lord. Bringing it full circle. Thanks, Purnell.
Yeah.
What I do. Come on.